And welcome to the Gig Stories podcast. I am Chris.
And I'm not. I am Alex. It's lovely to be back with you.
After a long time. It's been a while, hasn't it?
It's been 11 years now.
Yeah.
We've been having a little break. We've been very busy because, as everyone knows who listens to this, we were one of those lockdown podcasts, and then all of a sudden real life came back.
Yeah, and it's really inconvenient.
And we both discovered that our families still need us outside of lockdowns.
Rude.
demanding.
It's really rude.
And we've been busy and we wanted to give everyone a break, but we are back and we've got lots more episodes and some really exciting guests coming up on the Gig Stories podcast. But come on, Chris, who have we got this week?
We have the wonderful Richard Jupp, drummer with Elbow for how many albums? He's a founder member of the band. He's a drum teacher and just all round good egg.
And slapper of big wooden blocks.
Yes, as we find out in this episode.
Exactly. And responsible for some of the most beautiful evenings of music I've had in my life, whether that's in the arena or at Glastonbury, as I think I mentioned. What an incredible band, and what an incredible man and instrumentalist as well.
Absolutely. So we will be back after our lovely chat with Rick, and we'll talk about what we have been up to since our last chat with the amazing Pat Nevin. We will talk about our music experience over the last few months. But in the meantime, here is our chat with Rick Jupp.
Welcome to the Gig Stories podcast, and yes, as we just said, we have got the Beatmeister himself, Mr. Richard Jupp. How are you, Rich?
I'm very well. Good to see your handsome faces.
Bless you.
Once again.
We're not in front of a live audience. I was wondering who you were speaking to then. We're all specky minds. I was like,
all
hang
specked
on.
Up.
Who's looking? Who's
I'm
looking?
I've got my squint ones on. That's Alex right. Said, did you sit on your specs? I was like, well, stood on them, but yeah, look at that.
Listener, he's got the wonkiest right. glasses
Give
ever
kind
on.
Of European sort of flavour.
European cartoon flavour.
Oh, no.
Like a Polish cartoon.
Oh. Now, I've got to disclose, both Chris and I know Rich, and Chris, I think, did Gabe, your son, who we've spoken about last on the pod, did he have lessons with Rich, drumming
did.
Lessons?
Very much so, yeah.
And
absolutely.
And when I was that, you know, bright coloured cloth wearing knobbed on CBeebies, I was fortunate enough to be a few gigs with Elbow and backstage and chatting with Rich, but it has literally been years since I've seen you.
It's been years, and before you say it to me, you look even more handsome. See?
It's funny that, because I wasn't going to say that to you.
Shit.
Grease the wheels. No, I don't. You do look younger. Do you know what? We've mentioned this on the podcast, so you can check I'm not lying. We've wanted you on here for so long, and I'm so thankful that you've taken the time to meet with us.
Mate, honestly, it's you know, ever since knowing that you were going to do this and listen to your podcast, big fan by the way.
Bless you.
I've just been waiting for the phone call, but. You know. Patience is a...
All the other drums are rubbish. They're all rubbish. No, it's true. You have been responsible for some of the greatest nights of my life. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, first time you met me was at an Elbow gig.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, it was.
Which it was.
Yeah, the arena.
The arena in 20...
20. At the arena in 20.
20.
20.
Yeah,
in
about
20.
Yeah, about 8 o'clock, yeah.
I'm terrible with dates.
It was massive glitter ball.
Massive glitter ball, right, okay.
So it was the arena tour for Takeoff. Yeah.
Oh, for Takeoff.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And okay.
I've got to put my head on.
That was where we met. I've mentioned that as well. That's one of the best nights ever.
We were on Twitter before.
Yes, that crazy social media platform that is very normal now. Very normal indeed.
Mate, honestly, literally, it's like a couple of minutes and I'm...
That's it. 2 minutes. Block a few ads.
Yeah.
And then come off again.
And then get onto TikTok.
And oh, so
God. No, honestly, love it.
Love it. So that arena gig was just incredible. But I also saw you way back in the day in that first album in Cardiff. But we want to go further back.
Really?
Yeah, we want to know.
Is there not any kind of music ident further back?
No, we want to go right back to as a youngster, and how you fell in love with music and where that came from. Was it parents, siblings? Was it yourself?
So, first image that comes to mind is the classic of that sort of Gen. Are we Gen X?
Yeah,
I don't know what Gen X is.
It's Gen X. We're the coolest ones.
We are the coolest ones that nobody really talks about because we're just independent. We just get on with shit.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, we do it.
We get shit done.
We get shit done.
Yeah. I must be either much younger or much older than you two because that doesn't describe me. What describes me is I think I need to get some shit done. I've got a list and I haven't done it.
The procrastination.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got that. But it was the recording of the charts on a Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And my sister playing sort of, I mean, it's Depeche Mode, you know, seven inch singles, the chart countdown.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day actually, taping off the charts. Don't do it, kids, it's illegal.
It's copyright.
I think it dates you if you've got a taped off the chart, recording what was on it. So what is your, you know, absolute standard? What, because mine is Rise to the Occasion, Climie Fisher is on there. Future So Bright, I Got to Wear Shades. That was on. Is that?
Future So Bright. That's Easy Top.
Getting Good Grades. Future. Anyway, it's around about 1987. Is when I was doing proper recording off the radio. What do you reckon?
It's fuzzy. If I'm quite honest,
it feels so long ago.
There's a big chunk that I have to force myself to remember. Mm. But I do remember. It was Meadow Way in Totty. I know random facts, but not necessarily the facts I'm asked to remember.
Hmm. I love that.
So I just remember the looking at that tape and then putting sellotape over the thing, all that kind of vibe. Mm. It was the only band really that I remember is Depeche Mode, Everything Counts. That's the one I've kind of sat with.
You mentioned your sister. Is she an older sister?
2 years.
It's great that, because I've mentioned my sister quite a bit because she was a massive influence on me. And Depeche Mode, The Cure.
Yeah, my auntie Gaynor, my mum's sister, she was probably goth.
Right, okay.
That sort of Cure thing. Over the Road, Michael and Robert, they were into sort of rock, Iron Maiden, AC/DC, which kind of scared me. you know, sort of, you know, Eddie and all that.
Yes.
That.
Like, oh my God.
But they were quite influential. Mum and Dad, not that I can remember. They had records in the house, and I remember sort of, you know, riffing through them.
They weren't sort of big music fans, you'd
no,
say.
No, I mean, my dad is, it was, and I think still is, quite sort of Amdram.
Right, okay.
So, and my uncle Barry, my dad's brother, he was a drummer, but also
right.
a marine biologist.
Awesome.
So I wanted to be a marine biologist and a drummer. But there was a picture of him, and he played with sort of the other sort of professors and lecturers, travelled all over the world and stuff. So a very cool, enigmatic figure. But there was a picture of him, which I starkly remember, with a red sort of headband, massive beard, giving it, you know, top off, giving it the beans on a
yes.
kit. And it was like this sort of, I don't know, beacon of cool.
Yeah.
Angelic.
So I don't know where the sort of the mashup of listening and absorbing music to wanting to actually play it. I don't know where that sort of gelled and it sort of all came together.
Did that involve you seeing or hearing something live, perhaps?
Maybe. I don't know whether it wasn't really a gig thing. We weren't really gig goers, but we'd go and see Dad in a show. So there was a performance element to it.
Yeah,
there was musicianship and instrumentation, and I'd be able to go backstage and, you know, through the velvet rope or past the, you know, through the velvet curtain, and see the sort of inner workings of it, which fascinated me. And I'd help out my dad, you know, with painting and the backstage crew. Mm. And I loved that. And it made me want to actually be a drum tech rather than a drummer.
Yeah.
Because would you have said, if you could, and I know memories are sort of blurry, when you were having that experience, were you also sort of avidly listening to music? Or was the music perhaps secondary to, oh, this is great, sort of being in a performance world and on a stage.
I think understanding how it worked.
Yeah, was more interesting.
Rather than the end product. That's what really kind of fascinated me. And then seeing a really good friend of mine, you know, back in the day, a guy called Matthew Roberts, he was having drum lessons, so he had a drum kit in his room. And sort of obviously twinning Uncle Barry, drums, mate, Matt Roberts, BMX, you know, that kind of stuff, Bubble King, going to the corner shop, sunny all the time, those kind of vibes.
White dog poo,
there it is.
all right, I'm Peter Kays here.
And Alsatians.
Yeah.
That was it. It's like, we were talking about that the other day with my wife, Sarah, because of all the dog stuff going on at the minute.
Yeah,
Alsatians were everywhere when I was a kid. I've never clicked that. Yeah, I got bit by an Alsatian on my paper round.
He was always an Alsatian.
After the guy said to me, oh, I kid you not, he's all right, he won't bite.
Yeah.
And I
which,
bit
which
my
is
thigh.
Going on now, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all the XLs and stuff.
Anyway, wait, just...
Sorry, tangenting.
So alongside that, was there someone that, apart from your uncle...
So Matt Roberts, drum kit.
Yeah, that's
you
it.
You too.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
There's the see what I mean? It's hazy, but the mists are kind of clearing. But it was you two, Unforgettable Fire.
Yes. I'm so tired of people being really too cool for school and writing off bands like you two. And it's become, I don't know, cool to say how shit you two are or how embarrassing. I couldn't give a toss about Bonner's Politics or whatever. As a band, they were probably the second band to really influence me. After Tears for Fears, I'm just going to tell you something here. I'm going to admit this. This is late September that we're recording this. And last Saturday, Radio 2 had a live gig in Leicester, a massive outdoor gig, and it was on iPlayer.
Yes, and they were on.
Tears for Fears headlined, And I don't mind telling you this. Unexpectedly, yeah.
Good.
The second song in, they start, it was the opening riff to Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And then that absolutely glorious drum sound. I started welling up.
Yeah.
And my daughter's going, are you enjoying this, Dad? And I'm like, okay. Yeah. Because that was my first album that I ever bought with my own money. Songs from the Big Chair.
Core memories, man.
And literally straight away, I heard that and just went, how did I forget that this is the greatest song ever written? Because that's how emotional I was. I was on the edge on Saturday night, and I was like, this is the greatest song I've written. And then watching them both, I was just there going, oh no, he's bald. He's got really long grey hair.
Yeah.
What? And I'm 90 years old. What? This seems like yesterday. And it was incredible. But yeah, Tears for Fear. And I was like, oh, it's so funny how I still emotionally, and will always emotionally react to music in a nostalgic way like that. But then U2, I have the same thing with U2.
I remember when we had, we put out the Newborn EP. So first days.
Mm.
And
way back.
We had a letter off, a letter. I was, when I've
you
said
a letter.
Students a letter is a, and we had a letter from a couple who unfortunately had a stillbirth. And, you know, the most, the worst thing that can happen, one of the worst things that can happen. And they wrote a letter to us, or addressed it to Phil, the manager, and they said they were, they used newborn as a tool for grieving, or they, you know, that sort of, to try and sort of work their way through this.
Mm.
And they said they you know they since got pregnant and everything's going okay, so you know blah, blah, blah. I think it ended up, you know, a happy ending kind of thing. But I remember thinking, and I remember us discussing even at that, you know, at that early stage, well, fucking hell, we've done it.
Yeah.
Everything else from now on is must, we've got to see it as a bonus.
Yeah.
We know, we not that we don't have to work at it, but we've done that thing of, we've not done it, but we've resonated with somebody on a level, on such a profound level, that has affected, as you've just said, us. So yeah. you know, as we've talked before about, you know, our respective kids, and dare I say it in the most cliched way, the power of music, or the transformative power of music, that you echo and you mirror your emotions.
I suppose you. It would be absolutely impossible to connect with everyone, but the fact that you were able to connect with two people there is—I think that's
the matter.
That's what you mean. Well, you know, we could if it all ends tomorrow.
There you go.
There you go. Done. That's great.
Yeah,
and then the career of Elba after that, though.
Yeah.
Hilariously, you somehow managed to do every single single. You know, every track you then composed and came out with, and again, I've always been very open about my emotions on here.
Sure.
Music was my one hiding place, and I've on the podcast I've referenced sort of my strict religious upbringing.
Sure.
And I found live gigs was the place that I could sort of really feel myself. And that's continued. And
also a sense of community with other people.
Absolutely. And standing in the pyramid field in front of you guys when SAG Captains is on and just feeling my wife and my daughter just sort of take my arm, and I'm just bawling.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I'm sat there with
two blocks going like this.
Planks of wood. The amount of times I've chopped a finger.
Really?
Fuck me.
I'm not even kidding you.
Painful.
I'm not kidding you. I've wanted to ask you that question.
Yeah.
Because I knew as soon as I could see you picking up these in during those times, yes, they're playing SAG Captains. Yeah. And my wife's like, well, how do you know? And I'm like, Richard's picking up massive planks.
Wade,
he's got the planks.
Wrapped him in pink gaffer. So yeah, that's a good kind of giveaway.
So are you saying then that perhaps you two and Larry Mullen Jr.,
yeah,
that was, you connected and you thought, oh yeah, and I want to do
he
this.
He was the first one, him and Lee from Talk Talk. Lee Harris. Lee,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, it is Harris, isn't it?
Harris. Forgive me. I should know this.
I was listening along to their listening party with Tim Burgess again recently. They revived it. Talk. So underrated. Well, perhaps public.
Or mainstream. I mean, I went back. It came up on my TikTok feed that Last What You Make It.
Oh, it's incredible.
It just literally popped up. Mm. And it actually made me think, sort of active listening. Listening to that drum part underneath the sort of two and four.
The stuff on the toms.
Dibby,
and
dibby, dibby, dibby.
Yeah.
And just the way it's sat offset, it's amazing.
Mm.
You Two, Unforgettable Fire, Sunday Bloody Sunday, and space in music, because Larry Mullen Jr. was kind of, a Boys Brigade or something like that? So
That's exactly right.
He was a marching, or he'd learnt, you know, marching rudiment-based snare drumming.
Which you hear on Sunday Bloody Sunday.
That's it.
Bum-bum-bum-bum. Bum. Bum-bum-bum-bum.
But it's force of the floor. And, you know, there's a lot to be said of how versatile his drumming is. But it creates the space for sonics and all that lot. So I took a lot of that influence, and I think I pissed Matt off by just sitting and teaching myself on his kit. Sorry, Matt. Thank you. I think that's where that sort of the bond of performing the track or playing the track with the track, if that makes sense.
Mm. Okay.
That's where that sort of came about.
So when did you cobble together your milk round money and go to the local music shop and buy your first gig ticket? When was that? What
gig ticket? Now this is the one that kind of stumped me really. The first gig.
Yeah, that you paid for and that you were like, I'm going to, this is where I want to go to.
It was G Love and Special Sauce at the Roadhouse.
So how old were you then?
That is mega.
I have no idea. I cannot remember. It was because somebody, we were in the band at that time.
Right.
And I think it was...
Hang on, you were already in Elbow?
Yeah, we were kind of at sort of comprehensive school. We were just hanging out, do you know what I mean?
So you sort of...
Trying to learn a little bit.
You had a sort of band...
Yeah.
Yet you still hadn't been to your first own gig.
Not really, no, because Bury, you know, Manchester was a different animal. It was sort of, you know, Gotham back then. So it was a bit like you'd have to get a train from Bury into Manchester, and it was a little bit fruity.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know whether we'd, because we went en masse. That's the one I remember, anyway, because we all bonded over this band.
93?
Maybe, yeah.
Four?
Yeah, something like that. It's a Google.
Because they were fabulous live, because I remember, I'm sure it was 96, I'm sure it was pre-Radiohead Glastonbury, 97, so 96, 95, and they played twice on the weekend, and I remember seeing them twice.
They were doing a signing at... They were signing at Virgin, because we were hanging out on Market Street, and I'm sure they were doing a signing or an in-store and then playing at the Roadhouse that night.
So 76ers.
That would have been the first time. Yeah. The first gig.
I think.
And what a drummer. What a drummer. I mean, phenomenal.
The house, the Houseman. That's his sort of tag.
Right.
I follow him on Instagram.
Hell of a drummer.
And they're still going.
Yeah.
And the is it Jimmy Jazz? Jimmy Jazz Prescott.
Double bass.
And it was just like, and he's still playing, G Love. He's still touring, he's still playing around in
We have not had anyone say that G Love and Special Sauce was their first album.
Listen to that first album. No. It is phenomenal.
It's
phenomenal.
He was just so cool. I just remember thinking, yeah, this guy.
Yeah. And they were so nice because they hung out and said hello. Mm. And then I think, I don't know whether Guy had got a job at the Roadhouse then, but I don't think so. I think we paid for tickets. So that would have been the first sort of group foray, you know, with safety in numbers kind of thing.
Yeah, of course.
Into Piccadilly Gardens kind of Market Street thing.
What do you remember about being in? So that'll be your first time in a venue and a proper kind of sweaty.
In a proper sweatbox, yeah, yeah. Proper venue. Just in awe.
So a kind of a cross between exhilaration and fear, or yeah?
Yeah.
Which is how it should be.
And a healthy dose of cortisol.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, actually, no, there was one before that, but I'll go back to that. I think this is important in terms of that bonding of all of us being on the same sort of tip.
Mm.
And wanting to, you know, obviously the debrief afterwards was all about, we don't want to be in the audience, we want to be up there.
Yeah.
And making that decision, we want to do that to 200 people going fucking bananas,
yeah,
and singing your lyrics back. And we were like, this is kind of like a paradigm shift in terms of, right, we want to do it. Are we going to do it? Are we going to do it? Right, we're going to do it. Right, I need to buy a drum. I need to go and I need to do this.
I was going to say, how did that manifest itself then? Was it, right, get the big piece of paper out. We're going to sketch this out. We're going to, we need to do this. You know, was there a plan? Was there, no. Or we just do it,
we
more
just do it.
And do it better?
Right, we're eating tomorrow. Right, let's hang out tomorrow.
Tomorrow's the first day.
Tomorrow, next day,
yeah.
And then next day, and next day, and so, not wanting to spend time doing anything else,
yeah,
but this,
yeah,
and hanging out.
So, what was your first gig then as a band?
Right,
and you weren't called Elba then, were you?
No, I don't think at that time we were called. Shall I just say it?
Yeah,
we were called Miscellaneous Sales in school.
I see that.
Which
actually,
was,
I
which
didn't
was,
know that. That was
which
you,
was, yeah, that's my
idea.
Yeah.
Miscellaneous Sales.
It's good. It's not. It's terrible. Then.
It's just how you spell miscellaneous. That's, you know, you're not going to write that in your school bag, are you?
Is it double L? MS.
Double M at the front. And then it was soft.
Yes.
And then Mr. Soft.
That's the one. That's the one.
And was Mr. Soft, was that after the Soft Mints?
Yeah.
Mr. Soft.
Exactly that.
Right. Won't you tell
and
me?
Who's, who did that tune?
Would you live in this?
What was he called?
It was somebody from...
Christ. Not Ian. Mr. Soft. Okay, we're just going to edit this bit, listener, while we quickly
it.
Find out.
Here we go.
Ray Davis.
Ray Davis, the Kinks.
Is it Ray Davis? Kinks? No, it's not Kinks, but it's...
It was...
Can we do it?
It was...
Hang on.
No, I'm just looking at the...
Hold the line, call it... No,
I'm just looking at the... Fun fact, this isn't an advert, it's just what happens when Gordon Ramsay takes ketamine.
Oh my God, I want to see that.
We're gonna Google that and then...
Mr. Sun.
Now, shall I drop it in? I'll drop it into the
drop
edit.
It in. There you go. Drop it into the edit.
What an advert.
Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel. Turn it around and bust the world and watch the things you're going through.
Yeah.
So you were Mr. Soft, and what would you consider the first gig that you played then as a band?
It would have been the Met in Bury.
Really?
That was your first gig at the Met?
I think so. I don't know.
Bloody
hazy
show
memory,
off.
Man.
There's show off? That's like a lot, that's a big venue. On.
Well, yeah, me, Pete and Mark Potter, we did Assemblies.
Yeah.
First gig would have been Stand College.
Amazing.
Stand College. Right. And we had to break... did we have to break Craig out of school?
That's brilliant.
To do a lunchtime gig.
Really?
Oh, fuck it. That's it, yeah. Sorry.
You sound like Clint when he used to have to go and pick up Craig to go and do the Inspiral Carpets gigs. Pick him up from school.
Yeah.
Come on, we're off to London for a gig.
Is that right? I feel a bit ill.
Yeah.
I'm going to get picked up and then you know.
Is that Clint Boone picking him up?
Yeah.
So you had to get... Let's get Craig out.
Yeah, so it would have been a lunchtime gig at Stand College.
Right, okay.
And then it was sort of, right, we have... No, oh my God, I've missed out so much there. Jesus, not the Met, it'd be Monty's.
Where was Monty's?
In Bury.
In Bury.
So, Fairfield Hospital.
Yeah.
So up there, it would have been, there's a VW dealership on the left.
Yep.
Take a left just before there, and it's down there.
All right, okay.
Monty's and the Crowbar.
How many?
Why is this coming back to me now? This
okay, I like it. I like it. How many people were there?
Well, it's that time, isn't it? It's just you've got all your mates from college, so you know a good dose of 60, 70 people, something like that.
See, we've had guests saying, you know, Happy Mondays. They said that it was just, you know, handful and the man and his dog and what have you.
But the man with the dog was actually in Melody Maker,
wasn't he? Enemy or something. And he gave him this massive write-up saying these boys from up north, they need to be listened to.
It was guys we were speaking to, and he said, you know, we were, the promoter of the gig said, you know, we can pay you, but you don't have to do the gig. And they were like, no.
Because there was literally no one there, just man this dog.
And that was it.
They did it as a rehearsal. That was that. Anyway, what were you playing in that?
Like Santana covers.
Santana covers.
Santana covers.
Oh my gosh, that is hilarious.
So guy was on the bongos.
Oh no! No! No, you did not do Santana covers. Did you just say guy was on the bongos?
Absolutely. Is it bongos or congas? I can never get it right. It's bongos.
They're all the same.
Bongos.
There you go.
Guy Bongo.
We had tracks like fucking 10 minutes long. 15 minutes long. Stone Jam. Tom Jam, which I used as a backing track for my GCSE media studies project.
So it's got a legacy.
Mate, honestly, it's today.
I wanted to ask who else you covered, but I'm sorry, it's not going to get better than Santana.
There was a panning shot of the mate I did it with, I was following him with the camera, and he was a piece to camera, and I forgot to put the camera case away. So behind him was the camera case and all the shit, and it was just so bad, so unprofessional.
That is...
I need to find that.
That's brilliant.
And burn it.
let's push you on, because I mean we could literally talk for hours.
Sorry, yeah. No. So Monty,
no, it's not you. It's...
Then it was the Met in Bury, which was Derby Hall, which was the bigger. That was the Apollo of Bury.
Mm. Right, the Apollo of Bury. When which gig then would you, if you can remember, at which gig was it that you were elbow and that you were? We're on our way here, boys. This might be happening.
It would have been most probably PJ Bell's, which is now, what's the jazz bar on Oldham Street?
Matt Fred's.
So
I just assumed
PJ
that
Bell's
Matt Fred's
was
always there. Right,
yeah,
okay.
It was PJ Bell's before that.
Okay.
What, excuse my ignorance, because, you know, I wasn't living here then. That would have been pre Asleep in the Dark, Asleep in the Back.
Very much before Asleep in the Dark.
This was
maybe after, slightly after Asleep in the Back.
I said dark.
Mate, honestly, there was a session violinist, or one of the string section, who, when we were at the Dairy in Brixton, who said, I thought it was called Asleep in the Bath. which got us to maybe think about Dead in the Boot, which was the B-sides album.
No way.
Which we called Dead in the Boot.
Wow.
It was Dead in the Boot, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay.
Sorry, go on. Tangent in again.
So no, I love it. So can you remember why that gig? Can you remember what it was that you, why you thought, this could be it? Was it the people there? Was it the songs? Were they singing
actually,
them?
Actually, no. Probably the gig that felt like that was probably at the Roadhouse after we had played a couple of times in Manchester. Guy was sort of set his stall out in Night and Day, so that was kind of his office. And just the way he kind of, it was like a pathfinder. Do you know what I mean? He was like, right, fuck this, we need to get into Manchester, and I'm going to go in. So he went in, he set his stall out in Night and Day. Went out, socialised, did all that. So it kind of meant that people knew who he was and what he was kind of representing. Mm. Yeah. Fronting. Just yeah. really good back then, you know, back then at fronting. And then he got to know Katie and Natasha from the Roadhouse, and John from the Roadhouse, and Steve from the Roadhouse. John ran it. Steve was sound. Katie managed it. Natasha did all the booking and live stuff. So he sort of got to know and got in with all that crew, and then got a job there.
Amazing.
And then Pete got a job there because him and Pete were hanging around in town, and then I got a job there. And it was like, then we got to know all the Night and Day crew, all the Dry Bar crew, but that was a little bit gangster back then. And then between the three, and we got to know the PJ Bells crew because we'd finish at the same time, and then we'd all go to the Night and Day and get fucked up.
And it was all within a 3-minute walk.
It should have been a tunnel system.
Yeah,
underneath.
Absolutely.
It would have been much easier.
Yeah.
And then with that, you had later on, you had 10 Bar on Terrace Street, and then you'd be up to a band on the wall and all that kind of thing, and then you'd all sort of, Doves was there, Andy Votel, and
I remember in that time, do I remember you doing a gig on the same night? It was the record label night, and I think it was you
in the city.
No, you, Damon, Badly Drawn Boy,
yeah, Mum and Dad,
Clinic.
Yeah, really? they were Liverpool.
Yeah, they were the Scouse
lads. I can't remember his name, forgive me. He works at Lipper Sixth Form. And when I started at Lipper, I was getting a brew.
They were a band I was obsessed with.
Oh, they were amazing.
Absolutely incredible.
Amazing.
Used to wear their medical scrubs.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
They were famous because from the second album, one of their tracks was picked up for a, it was like a Wranglers or a Levi's jeans advert.
Right. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
right. Yeah, it was mad. It was like, what happened? But I think Voot was there. I'm sure I saw you on a night with them. And I'm trying to think what the label would have been, though. I thought it was a label night, but maybe I've got it wrong. But I thought it was you. I could get that completely wrong.
Because it was showcases all the time.
Yeah, and there were so many incredible artists. You know, people throw away the whole Manchester thing and just immediately think of, you know, oh, the Stone Roses and the... But
sure.
Push that, which is great, but push on the 90s and in the Northwest.
Shit, yeah, you had us, like you had Badly Drawn Boy, you had Doves.
Yes.
I mean, you know, that bit between the New Order and Stone Roses and all
yeah.
the rest of it.
Was it? I don't want to make something up here. Did it feel like you lot were on some kind of scene? That there was something, a new kind of thing happening in Manchester, or is that just really, me putting hindsight
on? We weren't from Manchester. We're from Bury.
Yeah.
So there was very much a distinction whether enforced or just we're making that up. I don't know. But I think we. And again, I might be making this up, but it feels right to think of it as us being part of the logistical element, like maybe linking it to before, thinking that we don't want to be part of anything. We want to
be on stage.
We're kind of our own thing because we tried to write singles from our limited understanding of what a single was.
And what it had to do. Yeah.
And obviously that's the journey that we took, and we tried to write 3-minute pop songs or do the relevant big chorus at half a chorus at the front, the relevant single journey. They just couldn't do it.
You realise it was that's the wrong way around.
Yeah, we just couldn't do it. And then, I think Guy bought in Talk, and it was like, oh fuck. So we don't have to do that. What we thought was the way.
Get to Station Approach, which is one of my, it's probably, possibly my favourite rhythm section of an album. That, I don't know how you made those drums sound so massive. It's just amazing. That album, it was like,
it's in the production.
They just turned it up a little bit.
That album was just,
overgained it.
Different venues, I think, and everyone knowing who this band were. It wasn't just, me and my geeky mates.
Yeah.
How did you find that sort of transition from doing the rounds of Club Ivo Bach and stuff like that to then releasing songs and going, oh shit, we're playing.
Because of a lot of people there.
Yeah, exactly. Did that change your behaviour or your mentality? Or because you can't hide from it because you're physically walking out onto a stage and looking out and going, oh, well, I can't count this lot. I used to be able to count how many were here. Yeah. Now this is massive. Did that change anything for you?
Yeah.
But are you... And do you know what? As you were just thinking that, I was there going, hang on, that's too open-ended question. Are you able to understand what it was?
Yeah.
Are you able to explain what that was? But did it mean you enjoyed it more? Were more nervous?
Oh, God. I'm trying to second guess myself now. It just felt natural. It just felt as if, we're doing the right thing. I think
we don't need to go back to the drawing board. We just carry on with what we're doing, and this will be the natural progression.
Yeah, without saying that.
Yeah,
it was just an understanding that we're okay. We're all right. Mm. I think I was. A little bit more disengaged because we'd had Dylan.
Yeah.
Okay.
So our incredible Dylan. Before all that started. Mm. So he was 3 weeks old, and I went away for just over 3.5 weeks when we supported the Doves in America.
Right. Okay.
So pre-mobile phone, pre screen of any kind.
Of course, yeah.
So it would be, you know, not to boo-hoo, but it was just like your phone cards.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Phone cards.
And time difference, it was like, okay, so yeah. So I think I was, you know, that's why it's kind of possibly a little harder for me to be present or was present with the question that you're asking.
Yeah, interesting.
Absolutely. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, there's a nuance that, yeah, that's real. I don't think anyone's
because
sort of...
Sarah was very ill.
Right.
So, and it came on relatively quickly after Dylan was born. And obviously with me being away, you know, we weren't earning any money at the time. Do you know what I'm saying?
You in that mid...
So it was like, Dad, burgeoning rock and roll, she'll be having fun, da, 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 da. I'm not going poor me.
No.
This is just a practical element of mindset is baby home.
Yeah.
And, and I was 26, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so 28. So still babies, really.
Yeah.
Do you know
but
I mean?
Also not whippersnappers as well.
Exactly. You're in that thing.
In
and,
weird.
And,
so that makes me think, because it is easy
but it
for us.
But it did feel like it was a natural progression.
Yeah.
So it was like, right, we fucking love these songs and we've crafted them because we like them. Mm. We're not trying to craft them for an objective viewpoint.
Yeah.
Even though we'd had that with labels and stuff, the guy who signed us, Nick Angel, it was amazing. You know, he gave us the opportunity and he believed in us. But he also was trying to sort of, okay, you know, I think he termed the phrase Radiohead for girls. Do you know what I mean? He was fucking brilliant, Nick Angel. Yeah,
when you heard that,
Radiohead
like,
for girls.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll take that.
I was like, yeah, we can. Because the hardest thing is, you know, when anybody who doesn't know who you are as a band or what you sound like, asking you what you sound like, and you think, well,
I still don't know what Radiohead for girls means.
No.
That's hilarious.
Well, go and listen to it. I think it was Powder Blue because we were trying to put a little sort of percussive element to it, jazz it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it was quite stark.
Yeah.
As a tune.
It's a gorgeous song, but it's got that twinkle light.
Yeah.
Sort of.
I think we were trying to understand what our sound was and our responsibility to the five of us. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
It was like, because we are so different, or we were so different, it was like, we've got to make sure everybody's happy.
Yeah.
So rather than being sort of philosophical, existential...
I think Station Approach was, and that era was us sort of...
This is it.
Right, okay.
We've got it.
Do you know what I mean? And the wedge shape and the dynamics and the orchestration and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We'd been flexing before that, and that's when it kind of coalesced.
Because that track in particular is...
Because when you see somebody's face, it's like... And you think, oh, fuck. It's like New Book, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know that in 4 minutes and 50 seconds, it's going to blow your tits off.
Yeah.
And I look forward to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a release for me,
right?
Rather than the Powder Blue, which is very staid. It's very, you know, it's very controlled. You know.
Yeah. So because
sorry, there was a lot in that.
No, because I think that's so important. Because I think for us music fans who go to a lot of gigs and dote on you, you know, you artists and live, there's a lot that we don't think about. That, hang on, I'm having the time of my life right now, but. I wonder if Rich is playing there and thinking about his sick wife or his son. Because that's just normal.
Yeah.
That's normal.
Yeah.
But
what I'm going to have to take.
Were you, Were you able, in those times, were you able to enjoy playing live? I'm
Absolutely.
Assuming you were able
that
to
was,
enjoy.
That was, yeah. You know, I mean, enjoying the whole thing. I'm not saying it was, you know.
I know that.
Dark clouds.
No, not at all.
It was like... yeah, that was me in a kind of nutshell. Those fucking 20-minute support slots, those, you know, 2-hour gigs, they were always super present. Obviously, you're going to work, and you drilled yourself, you'd rehearsed, you'd, you know, you'd made sure your shit was completely together. Apart from that one Werchter festival in Belgium, where we'd all kind of stayed up with a little help.
And how badly did it go?
Well, if you imagine, you know, the shaker at the start of Station Approach. As soon as you said that track, I was like, I'm going to tell that story.
Yes, please do.
So imagine, you know, massive night, and that thing you have to do. So you have to wake up, you have to go to work, and there's the shakes. So holding a shaker and it making a shaking noise without moving my hand.
Oh, God. And was everyone else in the same boat as well? Everyone was
super fucked.
Ooh.
Like, literally, half an hour sleep.
And this was a festival in...
Festival in Belgium.
Rockfest.
Amazing.
Rockfest, yeah. All right, okay, got you.
So amazing festival. So yeah. On that festival circuit...
It's massive, isn't it?
Huge. And when you said Station Approach, that was the gig that I think we all, because they were singing it back to us, and we were not at home. We were in Europe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that was like, oh fuck. And we were mortally hungover.
That is amazing. The moment that you thought we've broken Europe was your shittest gig.
Yeah. I was literally like that.
But did you only think that it was shit because you felt so shit, or was
we didn't. We weren't, you know, mentally available to make that decision whether it was shit or not.
No, I was going to say because you know you've been doing it for.
I wasn't.
You've been doing it for a decent amount of time.
I didn't.
Yeah, but you've got your muscle memory, and you've got, you know, and that would kick
Dr.
in.
Dr. Gig.
Dr. Gig, exactly. Dr. Gig.
But unfortunately, you know, elbow music isn't enough to kind of, for me to get a sweat on, to kind of get it out of my system.
Yeah.
But, you know, being present and being there, but also being amongst, you know, when the guy would turn around and Pete would turn around, especially at that gig, and go...
I'm glad you weren't having like, to do my sad captain.
We're all in the shit. Do you know what I mean? Proper trenches stuff. And it just served to go, let's not do that again.
Is that the worst gig you've ever played?
I couldn't have made that decision, but everybody else enjoyed it.
So
even if you go on and you have an absolute fucking belter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And everything's so right. This fascinates me because I massive Mannix fan, and I was backstage after and said to James, that's amazing. Just brilliant, so great.
You've touched my soul.
And he actually just went, this was his retort, he just went, are you taking the piss?
Yeah.
And I was mortified. I was like, no, it's amazing.
It
oh, because he's a perfectionist.
Yeah.
And he'd done a couple of things wrong,
mm-hmm.
that 99.9% of us will not have heard.
Nope.
And he wasn't happy. So it does fascinate me because you versus me, you're experiencing the gig in a very different way,
mm.
because there's really not much that Elba could do wrong in my eyes in a gig for me to go, oh, well, that was rubbish.
Yeah.
Whereas, so are you able to explain what the difference is between a bad gig and a good gig from your point of view? When you all come off and go, oh, there's something wrong with that. Or... the opposite way. Oh yes, we nailed that.
You just, you know, you come off and you can see by somebody's demeanour or throughout the gig, you can see if somebody's having a shocker or having a belter. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
But are you looking at your mate? Are you looking at the members? Or are you looking at the audience?
Both. You have to take into, well, which is most important, whether you've had a belter or the people who are paying money to come and see you.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I have wondered, what would have it taken, because I know there's lots of occasions where artists have walked off, you know.
Yeah.
Whether it's the singer, the guitarist, Rennie in, where was it, Holland or whatever, who just walked off.
Yeah.
What would it have taken for you to have just gone and walked off?
Not much.
That didn't happen ever, did it?
No.
That I'm aware of, without Elbow? No. You didn't know
something? There was one time when it was, and yeah, it was a festival, and there was a storm, and there was rain coming through, and it was falling on the equipment. And Tom, our tour manager, just said, "Can't do that. That's all." If it went to shit, you know, I mean, there's various times when things wouldn't work, or you know, gremlins. I don't know.
And
there's times when I've thought, "Fuck this," you know. We've lost it, but I'm sure I would have checked the audience, and if the audience, but I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, there was when we were playing the arena. I think the first time we played Manchester, you know, before we went on, we had like the backing track, so it was pretty primitive by today's technological standards, but we had like it's called the Roland R44, which is just like a field recorder, and it's pretty much bomb proof. So we'd have all the tracks on an SD card. We toured enough with enough bands who had fucking iPads and backup Pro Tools and da 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 da, and shit always went wrong. So we had that playing our backing tracks, stereo backing track and a click, and then it would go to Julian monitors, and then it'd be fed back. Dead easy, and it never broke, it never stuttered, anyway, so we had 15 or 17 seconds, so Wayne, drum tech, would go on and press play, and then we'd have 17 seconds, right, this is it, ears in, go, we've got 17 seconds to go on. He pressed it, and Guy went, "I can't hear anything," and this is, I think it was the first night, I think we might have done two nights, but I don't know. And I can't hear anything. Pack's not coming on. And we were all like, "Oh fuck!"
Could you hear anything?
Well, I usually plug my headphones in when I sit down, because I've got my little extender there. Just that's another security measure, so I'm not on RF, so it radio frequency.
Yeah.
Anyway, Guy was like. So Julian Monitors came down, you know, 15, 14, 30, and it runs through the first track, or first two tracks. So the lights go down, the fucking crowd's going nuts, and it's like, oh, fuck. Anyway, it was all fine, but he just didn't have any batteries in his pack.
Guy.
So we were pissing ourselves. And Julian, poor Guy, was just like, fuck. You know, I changed the batteries, make sure it's a fresh set for the start of the gig. Anyway, so we went on, and knowing whether you know, that was the bad thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Can it get worse? I don't think so, unless something falls over or whatever. So, yeah. Anyway, went on. I thought it was going really well, and I think, it was either Powder Blue, or one of the emotional ones, and Guy was giving it the beans down the front, and blah, blah, blah. This one kid at the front, he was looking at me, and then his finger buried up to the knuckle in his nose, like that, and he was just there, like, pulled it out, giving it a nibble, and I was just like, so there was a bit where I wasn't playing, and I was like, "Are you okay? Are you alright? Are you hungry?"
No!
Like that, and he looked at me, but he couldn't compute that, you know, that TV effect.
Yeah.
He can't be talking to me.
Yeah, this isn't the cinema, mate.
Breaking the fourth wall.
And he went, he looked behind him. And I was like, "You." And that kind of set me off. I mean, I nearly missed coming back in, but I just thought, fucking hell, I'm gonna ask him, is he all right? And then the other time, okay? when we supported Muse, and Guy again was doing, you know, the emotional stuff, double-handed on the mic. veins going, reaching the note, and somebody threw a fruit pastel in his eye. So there's shit like that that goes down. And being a pro, he went through it, and he was like, came off stage with that. I'm going to fucking kill him. I'm going to find him. Give me something. Like Mike. He was going to do a... what was he called? Bobby Gillespie, and go in with the fucking mic stand. Because he was a little kid, and he was like, oh. Anyway,
I mean, it's very Victoria Wood that when he hit in the eye with a fruit pastel,
you know.
You know.
But then you know, you've got
it wasn't a woman's weekly.
yeah, smack me over the bottom with a woman's weekly.
Woman's weekly.
So yeah, sorry, that's not really directly answering your question, but I think. If you're aware enough, you're taking stock of, especially being a drummer, and you're in one place. You know, me and Craig would be sort of aware enough to think, right, is it going well? Don't look at any individual person, but just if people are reacting appropriately to the song when the song ends, that's fine.
What was your favourite gig? I'm sure you have lots, but. What's one that you just really enjoyed and was just like, oh, it doesn't get better than this?
That's a toughie.
Mm.
I think...
because I'm sure you'd answer differently on different days.
Yeah, no, totally.
But today,
what's in the head is the first time we had trucks. So the Apollo... I think Master Apollo.
Okay.
Because it was a big production. You know, I remember the first time we had a splitter van rather than driving to gigs.
Ooh, get you.
In it, I tell you. Wow. A table. We could sit facing
you. That's interesting because what you've just done there is mentioned the things around the gig.
Yeah.
As opposed to the gig itself. So
that is interesting, actually.
Okay, that is very interesting. So it was sort of...
I knew that would be... That's fine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It might be a bigger crowd, a bigger roar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because there is nothing like that at all. As soon as the lights go down and the crowd roar. Yeah.
What was the loudest crowd?
Fucking hell, primary school. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, come on. What was the loudest crowd?
Glastonbury, you know what I mean?
Yes.
When they started singing Hey Jude was on, and then it morphed into One Day Like This. It was 2011, I think it was. And when they're singing that, and before you go on, you think, right, don't fuck it up.
Yeah, or it's going to take something not to fuck this up.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have a whiskey.
I think that's possibly one of your... It's so obvious, I know, to go with Pyramid Stage, Glastonbury. Yeah. But I think... But I have seen you play in the arena in Manchester, so I've seen your home gigs, I've seen you play the Apollo, but that, I felt really chuffed at that gig. I just went, oh, yes, the boys have nailed it there. And I remember you then just walking off and all of us just going, that was it. They should have.
Let's get ready for Coldplay.
You should have headlined. You should have headlined.
Well, they are.
I love Coldplay
as well.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah, and I think it was really nice because we were fortunate. You know, they asked us to support them a few times, but in America, in the middle bit. So it was these, I can't remember what they're called, so that you've got seats up to a point which are covered and then you've got a grass bank, you know, sort of 10, 15, 20,000.
Yeah, yeah.
And we supported them sort of in that middle bit of America. And, you know, we got on really well with them. We'd known them since they played at the Roadhouse.
Yeah.
You know. Not like for mates, but it was just like, oh, how you doing? And then, you know, and then see him on the festival circuit and stuff. And it was really nice that, I think, was that the storm? And I think a couple of bands had to pull the set, and then when we went on, the fucking sun came out. It was that sort of, was it that one?
Wolf Mountain? No.
Maybe. I think it was even like Lily Allen had had to pull her set. I'm sure that was.
Oh, sorry. Are you going back to the pyramid stage now?
That was that gig.
Oh, no. The pyramid stage. Did, yeah. That is that gig.
Shut down.
Yes, that. Yeah. No,
and
totally.
They, we had
you
that,
came
we
on.
Had that little. That sort of. The evening.
Yeah, and set. The sun came out. I've got pictures of that because that was the thing. That was the thing. Oh, it's raining. Rudimental.
Right.
Rudimental sent off.
There you go.
Halfway through because of the storms.
Really? Because it was all getting soaked.
Yeah, it was like, hang on, this is dangerous.
Yeah.
They, bless them, they weren't even able to come back on. My heart broke for them. And they were only like 15 minutes in. And that was their first sort of main stage.
Yeah, it was a big one.
Sort of, yeah, it was a big one. And it was dark, and where they're going, oh man, if they keep pushing this, they're going to bump elbow, and we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And you came on, and the.
And it cleared up.
And it cleared up one day like this, and everyone's just like, shut up.
Yeah,
who have you sold your soul to arrange this? it was the perfect, you know. Well, we've been going, I mean, we've been talking to you already for ages, and we normally have our quick fire round, but
okay.
We've sort of been. Accidentally doing it anyway,
all right.
Mm.
And I think we're just being chatting more as mates here. So I'm just happy just to carry on. And we can say for the regular listeners, it's the quickfire round
that
which
you've
is,
been listening to.
For yeah, that you've been listening to, and we'll continue.
Can
we'll
I
continue
just go,
with that?
There's
go
one
on.
Question that I was going to ask within the quickfire round, which was surprising support. So basically, maybe this is when you're. At a festival and you come after or you come before a particular band and it's just the most odd contradiction. We asked James Atkin from EMF, what was this? He was like, yeah, we did a couple of gigs with the Wurzels as EMF.
What?
And we were pissing ourselves laughing. He said, oh yeah, we booked them.
And then tells us about, like, the... And I found it on YouTube, the gig they did in Rock in Rio, you know, where they're playing then in front of 130,000 and it's absolutely mental.
Yeah.
And you're just like...
But I think
and they're on
the
bill with mad metal bands.
Well, that's it. So I remember hearing the lads from Everything talking about... they were picked up to support... Simple Minds, that was it. They were supporting Simple Minds, and they were saying they could not have been less welcome, not by the band, but by the crowd.
Right.
So
Manic Street Preachers, that you're part of, same thing.
Really?
Yeah, they
just not welcome. Not
welcome.
Oh, when you supported them, were they not welcoming?
You fucking shit. That was a good chant. That got some traction.
Oh, you just mean the fans?
Oh yeah, the fans. No, all the band, beautiful.
Okay, I was just going to leave
amazing.
The room crying.
Yeah,
I was about to cry.
No, amazing. No. Just yeah.
See the boys.
Yeah. I mean, they're fanatical, and rightly so. They're amazing. But
which was that amazing? Because you're on the same. Label, or is it just because they liked you and wanted you, right?
Because
I know that sometimes these kind of
it happens
because the label, and it just doesn't make sense. Sometimes the audience is the last people they think about.
Yeah,
they go, well, this is going to be cheaper. We'll do that.
And it also each serves.
Yeah,
each and record sales and stuff and
yeah,
tickets and whatever.
So, but the Manix fans did not. Take to
yeah, they didn't at all.
That's interesting. That
yeah,
because I thought they would. I'm trying to. But what tour was that? Can you remember even? No, of course not.
Early days. I'm pretty sure that would have been yeah.
Although it would have been Tolerate, I imagine.
Yeah,
that kind of era. I'm trying to think. Must have seen you supporting.
Yeah, I can't remember where.
That's so funny that not. It's weird. Have you guys taken a support band on tour that didn't work out and you were like, oh, that didn't go down well with the fans? Or that's no, because if you answer
that's
that
mean.
Could put you. Yeah, that could be me.
No, I think we've been pretty good in because we always try to think about sharing the stage as sort of. Magnanimous as that sounds,
that's true.
It's like you try and make it an evening of, evening with, that sounds like Victoria Wood again.
Bob Monkhouse, Des O'Connor.
Des O'Connor. Because you want value for money, don't you? Do you know what I mean? You do want that band to feel as welcome as...
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds so shit.
No, it doesn't. Do you know it's true. It's
you're
true.
You're trying to perpetuate nice. that thing of, well, we want to watch that band and feel stoked that yeah. you know, and yeah. see them do their thing and get more comfortable and we all get better over the course of the tour.
So have you toured with a band where you've heard them play before you go on and go, oh, fuck it, we might as well just go home now then?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I've spoken to Adam, yes. Adam go, from Blue Tones, talked to him about... Right. They were supported by Radiohead. and they played. And it was like, oh,
fuck it.
Who's right. this band?
Just let them carry on.
It's yeah, fine. Exactly.
Apparently, they're Elbow for Boys.
Oh, dear me. Yeah. Good.
Bye bye.
We're done.
Bye bye.
We're done. Lift. Off your head. The band is called Lift to Experience.
Lift to experience,
and it was on a festival. What were they called? Fucking hell! It was a kind of a label thing. It was a guitar, Grasshopper, the guitarist, with. Yeah, it's in there.
Grasshopper.
Grasshopper's the guitarist.
American rock band.
Yeah.
Come out and play.
Grasshopper guitarist.
Grasshopper. Because I thought you were just misnaming Flea for a second. I was like, do you mean Flea, the bass player? Do you mean Grasshopper?
Yeah.
Mercury
Rev.
There you go, Mercury Rev.
Oh, no, it's not who I was thinking.
Right, okay.
Mercury Rev.
So Mercury Rev. It was in Europe. Very hazy. Again. And Lift to Experience, they were, it was like being run over.
In a good way?
In a really good way.
Because that name, it sounds like a kind of new Christian rock band. You know, it sounds like they would play...
There was elements of, not Christian, but there was elements of that evangelist.
That's what I mean,
creature.
A kind of Evanescence kind of...
Yeah, but
emo.
Yeah,
yeah.
More Americana rock,
Americana.
Half-time, jazzy, but rocky. Drug, alcohol induced, desert.
I need to listen to this band. I want to know what the hell you're on about.
Well, we're going to create a page for you. Everyone we interview, we've got a page on our website, and it's got a playlist, a Spotify playlist, and also we'll have videos of tracks that you have been talking about.
Yeah.
So
we'll put them on.
That on.
Also Laura Marling.
Oh, right. Oh, fantastic.
She supported us, played one time tour with us. Early on, and her she was playing with, it might have been a boyfriend, apologies if that wasn't the case, but Marcus Mumford.
Oh really?
So
oh,
he was playing wow. with, he was the other musician with Laura.
Yeah.
And he would play a kick drum and that.
Yeah.
Oh no way.
And you
little
like,
did we know.
Wow.
Whatever happened to them? Who is your favourite artist that you've seen live?
So, me and Sarah, my wife, went to see LCD Sound System for the Apollo.
Yes! Yeah.
And
Chris reminds me of him.
Yeah.
You do. Yeah.
In a very good way.
Yeah, in a great way. Yeah.
Bless you both.
Just not as good live.
And it was like, and I do not advocate taking drugs, but it was very much like coming up on a pill, even though we were both you know, both we both saw what happened for years. It was like being, you know, carried along, just in terms of a band playing together in a in that way that we've described over the course of this discussion.
And you know the funny thing? Anyone that knows LCD Sound System has seen them live.
Mm.
I have, lucky enough. I know exactly what you're trying to explain there.
Yeah.
It's so difficult, but they have such
orgasmic.
Yes, they have such a unique, hypnotic, trance-like, that's not like anything else.
No, because it's...
It's
organic. It's everybody... Somebody's coming up and it's all... It's like trying to find your biting point when you're learning to drive.
They have so many levels within a gig.
But they're sort of looking at, you can see the interaction on stage, and he's just on it. He knows exactly what he's doing, and it's almost like trying to contain an explosion. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's that sort of trying to I don't know. This is a shit. Comparison, but you know, you're trying to tame a fucking stallion or whatever. It's that unbridled, I'm losing it, you know. The bluebird on Coniston, you know,
Donald Campbell lost it.
And it's like being that fucking cool when I'm going to be obliterated. Do you know what I mean? And they're just going to find my teddy. But having it, no, it's gone. But having that unbridled sort of.
For the whole time.
Sigur Rós as well, when I saw them at the Apollo.
Yeah, they...
I mean, there'll be others. As soon as we stop recording, I'll be like, oh, no, this is fucking baggy when I saw it.
Well, speaking of stopping recording, I think we're getting very close.
Yeah, we are.
I think if we go to our final question that we ask everyone, which is...
Favourite colour is red.
I told you it'd be red.
Oh, are you United, not City?
Fuck that, City. Sorry, no, cut that. City. City.
Cardiff City.
No, it's black. It's my favourite colour. Black and twat.
Black twat.
So, your favourite piece of live music, so you go to either a live track, a live album, or a video of a live performance on YouTube.
AC/DC.
AC/DC, which track, please?
It would probably be... I think they did not do it live on the recording. Let There Be Rock.
Yeah.
Right.
Or...
I love this, because I've mentioned this.
It's that or Whole Lotta Rosie.
Whole Lotta Rosie. Yeah.
And on the album?
Well, I think the album, because they played it live.
I think
so.
It
feels live.
Because
again, you've got that... Fucking hell, it's... can't... You know what I mean?
I love that you've said that. Because me and my boy... I haven't watched it for a while, but regularly we would watch their River Plate gig.
Yeah,
South America. It's on YouTube.
Maybe.
And it's in HD as well, man. And you've never seen such a big crowd. The whole of South America are at this gig.
Did they do three or four there?
Yes.
It was just like loads. A week.
And when you, whatever track it is, when it kicks in, it is terrifying.
Terrifying.
Because you're not sure whether you're looking at an audience or the sea in a storm.
How the sound sort of dissipates, and then you've got your push speakers halfway down. So it is a ripple, isn't it?
Yeah, because it's hitting them just slightly later, and it's like the biggest crowd you've ever seen.
Like a swarm of bees.
Oh, it's mad, honestly.
Where you see the ripple.
Yeah.
Just check.
It's amazing.
Search it on YouTube.
But it's got to be Bon.
Oh, okay,
it's got to be Bon,
and that's fine. That's I think
I love
that's
you, Brian.
Yeah,
but it's got to be Bon for me. I've got to tell you one little quick story.
Yes.
So, first foray into backing tracks, Leaders.
Yeah.
That era.
Yeah.
I thought Leaders of the Free World when we played it live was too slow.
Okay.
So this is that kind of like stage view versus audience view.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't ever too slow. Wasn't ever too fast. It was the speed that it was. But having to maintain that kick, snare, kick, snare, all the way through, I in my infinite capacity and knowledge and font of experience. We had a CDJ 9000, so old school DJ CD. Yeah. But you could tamper with the tempo. You could push it. What did I do?
I tampered with the tempo.
Lock off and pushed it.
Accidentally.
No. Very, very intentionally.
with no warning to the rest.
Oh God, why would I bother telling anybody else?
When would they have heard that?
When I counted in.
Shit, I feel so anxious.
And it was the Virgin Festival tour in Australia.
So how much did you push it up by BPM?
Probably
wise?
That.
No.
Din, 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 din. Yeah.
Bet you were flavour of the month.
Did they all instantly look back?
Yeah.
And what did you do? Smiled and carried on.
I just went, I'm fucking really sorry.
But you're already...
Oh, you're in, you're committed.
Because there's no way of slowing it down, is there?
Balls deep, in front of, what, 50, 60,000 people?
So after that, did they put a padlock on the lock as
yes.
well?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think they got somebody to stand there.
did they laugh afterwards?
Eventually. I don't know how long it took. But I was very, very sort of like, yeah, I fucked up.
How did it sound, though? Did
great.
It sound awesome?
To me, yeah. Fucking brilliant.
Because to the drummer.
It was like Hello Rosie.
Excellent.
There you go.
I love that. Oh, man, I could speak to you forever. I know Chris could.
Same, man.
And we appreciate your time. And
no, thank you. Thank you.
And appreciate your stories and... I think people are going to love this.
It's all going in the book.
It's all.
Oh, the book.
You heard it here, fourth or fifth listener.
I did sign an NDA. Hey,
Richard Jupp, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ah, you beauty. What a beautiful man. What a wonderful guest.
Absolutely. And thank you so much to Andy Nesbitt from Bridgewater Hall, who at very late notice sorted us out with a lovely room. It was funny. It was a lovely room in Bridgewater Hall. And we got in there and there were a couple of photos on the wall of Elbow playing with the Halley Orchestra for Manchester International Festival. I don't know when it was, 2013 maybe, 2015,
yeah,
I can't
something
remember.
Like that.
Mr. Jupp didn't appear in any of the photos.
who needs the drummer, eh? Drummers aren't important in bands, Chris, are they?
No. Well, yeah, that was a lovely chat. It was good to catch up. And
what a band. One of my all-time favourites. You know, even now, I still listen to them now. Rich isn't playing with the bands anymore, as we've mentioned, but he's still doing wonders, and I still listen to those albums that he was on.
And as we mentioned, it was the first time we met in actual real life, was the Elbow gig at the arena.
Oh, yeah, you and I.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's when our lives went downhill.
And everyone else who listens to this podcast.
So a great episode, and we promise you we've got some amazing guests coming up. So huge love to Rich for speaking with us.
Yeah.
Now, come on, Chris, let's have a catch up. It's been a little while since the last episodes. What's been going on in your world of music?
Well, I've been photographing a lot of music. The majority of it has been classical music, which has been lovely. I have in the past done bits and bobs, but this year seems to have really, you know, taken off. So I photographed a thing called Manchester Classical, which was at Bridgewater Hall, and it's the first time the four big orchestras got together and put a weekend programme of events.
Flip-flopping or actually playing together?
No, not playing individual. Yeah,
right, okay.
So you had the Halley Orchestra, BBC Philharmonic,
Manchester Camerata and Manchester Collective. And so I ended up photographing six concerts, but they were all really kind of bite-sized concerts, so about an hour long. Tickets were about £10 each, so really accessible and kind of an introduction to loads of people who would maybe not normally go to a classical music concert. So it was brilliant, and the demographic of the concerts was a lot different to what I've experienced in the past, yeah. Which is largely an older audience and a whiter audience. There seemed to be a lot more diversity in the audience because of that price, you know, the pricing and.
That's so good.
Yeah, it was great. It was a really good atmosphere, and I loved it.
I think I've said this in over the past, well, since we've been doing the podcast, is the truth. To my shame, I just haven't been to classical concerts for years. Mm. In fact, I am struggling. I'm struggling to think of the last one I went to. Yeah. And that's such a shame. And so I'm going to, 2024, I'm going to get to some classical concerts, at least one or two.
Yeah.
Because I miss it. I used to love it. And I think partly because of circumstance. I'd go with my mum, and that was an easy thing to do. I need to get my kids there. I want to get my kids there and introduce them to, you know.
Mm, absolutely. I mean, I've done some more for BBC Philharmonic since Manchester Classical. I did one on the night of Children in Need at the Philharmonic Studios at BBC, and that was pretty wonderful.
I bet
it was. And so it was a concert. There was the first concert, and then there was a Children in Need special where Alexander Burke sang with the orchestra.
Oh my gosh.
And did a version of Alleluia, which was pretty spine tingling.
Was it?
Yeah.
Her voice is incredible.
Oh, she's knockout, absolutely knockout. So yeah, so that's been my musical experience in classical stuff.
On a very similar to Alexandra Burke and you, I do remember the last time I was. And it was Bridgewater Hall, sold out Bridgewater Hall with the BBC Philharmonic, and it was actually last year with Mr. Tumble. So very similar to your evening with them and Alexandra Burke, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very little difference.
And what did he perform?
All the classics.
All the classics. the Cornetto one. Yeah.
And do you know what was really sad? Is actually,
apart from the obvious,
is the Philharmonic. They were, I've never seen them so excited. And I'm like, what's going on? And this is so sad. They said, well, because they perform fairly regularly at Bridgewater Hall and never to packed houses. They're like, it's generally a few hundred people. I'm going, and this blew my mind. I said, what? And they're like, yes, that's the truth. And so we did. Three shows, all of them sold out, full Bridgewater Hall with Mr. Tumble. It takes Mr. Tumble to sell out a BBC Phil.
Tumble effect.
Exactly. But that was heartbreaking because I thought, oh man, I'm one of those empty seats. I'm not there watching them, and I should. And that's so.
And he's not available for every one of their concerts.
He's not, sadly. No. I just asked him.
Yeah.
And he's right. Not available.
He's a bit pushed busy wise. Right. Okay.
So I've had you know, my gig going just keeps ramping up. Hmm. Now that Grace, who's my daughter, that if you're a regular listener, you'll know about. She's now 17. She's got her own job, so she's now starting to buy gig tickets. You know, so she's saying, "Right, Dad, we're going here, there, everywhere," and just last month, we had three nights in a row, and it was just. Amazing, but the highlight was on the Sunday night, Nothing But Thieves at the Apollo,
right,
who I just absolutely love. His voice, and he'd been ill as well and was holding it back, his voice is incredible. And that's listening to them, even though they're very, very rocky, listening to his voice is the closest I'm going to get to Jeff Buckley.
Okay.
And if In fact, if you go onto, it's definitely on Spotify, so I don't just want to needlessly push Spotify. It might be on all the other ones as well. But he does a couple of Jeff Buckley cover versions.
Oh, right. So
and
there's an influence there.
It is,
right.
Oh, it's like listening to Jeff Buckley. Right. It's incredible. It's the closest I've heard.
And that's right up your street.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That, what a voice. And then the Monday night, it was... four of us, the little one couldn't go because she's too young for the venue, but me, my wife and Grace and George, Little Sims, Victoria Warehouse. Right. Oh my gosh. And the last time I went, which was what, a year and a half ago, something to her, it was the Albert Hall and I was banging on about it on here. The woman can do no wrong. She, I got goosebumps thinking about it. It is amazing. It's amazing. Her live... Interesting, on the last tour, live band, this time they were hidden away and then halfway through a guitarist and someone else came out, but you could hear that they were live behind the screens or wherever. You could still hear that there was a live band.
They were just hidden?
Screen, yeah, just hidden.
Okay.
Behind screens, whatever. And it was obviously an artistic choice because the staging was amazing. Right. She had these amazing screens, but they were obviously hidden behind screens. Yeah. And I have always wondered, because that happens a lot in various genres of music, but I do wonder how that conversation goes. Right, guys and girls, we're back on tour, yeah? What's going to happen this time? Sorry, Chris. You will be playing drums for me, but you're going to be... No one's going to see you, mate.
You're essentially in another room. You'll still get paid, obviously, yeah. And people will be able to hear you, but...
But let's be honest, that's no difference to the theatre or anything, is it? No one's seen you down in the pit, and it's no difference to gorillas sometimes. You know, I saw gorillas when all of them were behind just a big sheet at the back, you know, and there was just projections. Oh, but awesome. It was... because it's also... Especially in that genre, it is very easy just to be using backing tracks and DJs, though. And she still uses a live band, and the sound is incredible.
So what was the third gig then in that week?
Oh, hilarious, because this was Grace, and wouldn't be my choice at all, Pigeon Detectives.
Okay.
But those sort of noughties... indie bands are coming right back with sort of this generation, like Grace and her college mates.
Well, they're good fun live Pigeon Detectives as well, because we saw them
supporting Shed Seven. Yeah. And he, what a front man. You got some great picks. If you've not seen them, listener,
lots of kicks, lots of jumps.
Yeah, get onto Chris's website, Chris Payne Images.
Well, that's on Gig Stories,
and on the Gig Stories website. Great pictures. So the Pigeon Detectives, Wombats, those kind of sort of noughties bands that are coming back now. Kids love it.
Well, just as well, because I missed them the first time round, I have to say.
Yeah, me too. It was sort of, I think, a circumstance and an age thing as well.
Everything's an age thing now.
So now I believe. A genuine listener, I don't know what Chris is going to say, but you've also taken your lad to, how are you phrasing it?
Well,
his first ever gig? What?
Yeah, because we went to Kendall Call in the last 2 years, and he's been to various other festivals.
And he's a very talented young musician. Hmm. He's only a young lad, and so he's played in lots of, concerts.
He's played at Bridgewater Hall countless times, and...
So very Gig Stories podcast, because you and I always say, well, we both grew up going to classical stuff, but our first gig was The Shaman or whatever, Michael Jackson, whatever. Yeah. So this is going to be your son's sort of...
I think so. He went to a gig at the Jazz Festival, which was Albert Hall, and I can't remember, it was a brass band. But this one, I took him to at the end of November. And
end of November, just gone now.
Yeah, yeah.
And which venue? Tell me the venue first.
Well, it was a first for me, the Home Firth Picturedrome.
Oh, Home Firth Picturedrome.
Amazing.
What amazing venue, hey. Oh,
loved it. And it was rammed. It was absolutely rammed. And so it's...
I haven't got a clue who you're going to say.
So it scratched a 35-year itch.
For you?
For me. Because...
What?
Gabe had started learning one of their tunes, and so... But he didn't know he was going. And even when we went into the venue, I said, why don't you go and have a look up at the merch stand and see who you're going to see?
So this was a secret,
yeah,
and you'd kept it from him,
yeah,
and you got into the venue,
yeah,
and he didn't know until he went to the merch stand.
Yeah,
that is classic parenting there.
That's good, isn't
that
it?
That is very good, yeah, my friend.
I didn't think I'd get that far, but yeah, merch stand was when he found out.
Okay, who was there a support act?
There was.
Can you remember who they were?
Yes, they were. We got there for the support.
Good.
And there were two pieces called the Hazy Janes.
Oh, Hazy Janes. Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay.
And they were great, very loud, but they were great.
Yeah.
So drums and guitar.
Yeah. They've been doing the circuit. They've been around a lot of supporting a lot of bands. Mm. Okay. And who else?
That was it.
Okay.
That was his support. You're not going to guess. Because I never thought I would ever get the chance to see them live, because I haven't seen them.
Oh, the Lighthouse Family.
I've followed them on tour, man. Right, so we went to see Living Colour.
No!
Yeah, Living Colour. He'd been learning Love Rears Its Ugly Head. Yeah.
They played Manchester?
A few days later with Extreme.
This is God's honest truth. So I've been working abroad, listener. I had a message from one of my producers that I worked with on Justin's house saying, hi mate, how you doing? You don't fancy a ticket for Extreme and Living Colour tomorrow night in town, do you? I just went, oh, I'm not in the country.
Yeah.
That was the tour. It was the Manchester date he was asking me about.
Yeah.
So you took him to home first?
Yeah, because
yes.
I tried to get tickets for Manchester, but it was totally sold out. And then I thought, oh God, I've missed it. And then realised Homefirth was still available and it was them headlining. So they were amazing.
But it's Living Colour and Extreme.
That was the Manchester gig. But Homefirth was just them. So
was
it was
just
a
them.
I think it was a warm-up.
Oh, amazing. So that's even better, really, because
yeah.
I'm not bothered about Extreme.
So I photographed it and I'll get the images up on the website. But
he's amazing.
Corey Glover, honestly, all of them.
Because what age is he going to be now?
Oh,
is he 60?
Kicking on 60, yeah. So there's Corey Glover, Will Calhoun on drums. The names of the guitar. Vernon Reed on guitar.
Yes.
And the bassist, who was one of the kind of early movers and shakers in the hip-hop scene. It was like a session musician for Grandmaster Flash. And
yeah, okay.
I'll put up a video that I took of them doing they did White Lines and, they did a kind of medley of classic hip-hop tunes. Anyway, they were brilliant. Corey Glover climbed up on one of the speaker racks and was they were having to say, don't jump, man.
I'm not doing that at my age, never mind.
Well, yeah,
in another
exactly.
10 or so years'
and
time.
And then he walked back through the audience and they did a cover of Sex Machine by James Brown. So I had to say to Gabe, this is the equivalent of taking him to his first football match and it's a 5-4 win for your team in
absolutely.
Extra time.
Absolutely.
They're not always like this. Gigs aren't always like this. But
spoil.
It was a cracker. Real cracker.
Oh man. That's a serious bit of nostalgia.
Yeah.
Because it was completely lost on me that they were touring.
Mm. Well,
so
I nearly missed out, but luckily got tickets and so they were amazing.
That and how was Gabe?
Yeah, I mean, Gabe is, I think maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he would have been, oh my God, oh my God. He's a
played
lot,
it cool.
He's a lot cooler than I am.
Teenager.
Yeah, but he's a lot cooler. But I could tell, you can tell. And he was like, yeah.
That's so cool.
So yeah, well, it was great.
A Little Sims, we stood the four of us, you know, together. Support act and then ready for her on, and George was like, all right, she's coming on, see you later. We're like, what?
Just went off.
What? Yeah. And we then get pictures and videos. He's down on the front barrier, you know,
good lad,
right at the front screaming, and we're just stood at the back like,
Yeah.
Well, old, I mean, people dancing.
You're too old for that. You know that. Pardon? Yeah? You're too old for
what?
That. Yes.
Hey?
You heard.
This is terrible. This is absolutely terrible. Well, I'll have you know that hilariously you say that. I've mentioned them on here. They're called Joey Valence and Bray, and they're the two young kids who were basically influenced by, you know, the Beastie Boys. And I've seen them a couple of times, and their last gig was just a couple of months ago in the Academy. And I'm on their social media in the mosh pit, me and George. Mm. And it is very funny. And yes, I am the oldest one in there.
Yes.
So long may that continue.
You look more like security.
And you know what? It's so nice that you and I are having that experience of seeing our kids go through, you know, the excitement that we did of going to gigs. And oh, it's just brilliant.
Yeah,
it's just
brilliant. It was a proper gig. It was great. We've got loads to chat about. You were at Glastonbury, I was at Kendall Calling, but I think we can leave that for our next episode, which will be out in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, I just want to thank Andy Nesbitt again.
Thank you, Andy Nesbitt. Thank you.
You're a good man yourself. Also, we're back. We're going to have loads more episodes. Once you've listened to this, go and subscribe to the podcast on wherever you get it. Like it on iTunes.
Don't just like it.
Leave us a little review. Say hello.
Yeah.
Any comments, and we'll read them out on the next episode.
Send us your picks.
But if you do like or subscribe, it does help us move up the kind of rankings, and it means that more people will be able to see our podcast, and hopefully we can bring more of them to you. Have you got any more to add, Alex?
Thank you, Richard Jupp. And listener, till next time. Love you.
Bye.